Now, Rich Dad, step number three is know the difference between risk and risky. And I oftentimes hear people say to me, it's because it's worth repeating, oh, investing is risky. I disagree. See, there is risk in investing, but it doesn't have to be risky. In fact, if you're highly educated, you can almost wipe out all risk. Again, the problem is most people wind up as employees or self-employed, and they very rarely know the laws of the rich, which come from the B quadrant, the business owner, or the investor quadrant. So let me give you an example between risk and risky. When you drive a car, there is risk. But if you drive down the street and you take your hands off the steering wheel and you stomp on the gas, that's risky. What they determine as risk is because they're out of control. They do not have control, number one, of their own business because they're too busy minding somebody else's business, which is step one. And number two, they're out of control of their own personal finances. And the third part about risk and risky is if you have no education and you're trying to leverage your money, you know, enter the stock market, I'm going to be a day trader, I'm going to buy some mutual funds, I'm going to buy some derivatives or whatever you're doing, I'm going to buy some real estate without education. Without the proper education and experience, that's extremely risky. So what most people consider risky is because they're the risky person due to lack of education and experience. But investing in itself is not risky. There are risks, but it doesn't have to be risky. Donald Trump was probably the biggest loser after the 86 Tax Reform Act because he was in real estate. I think he personally was in debt up to $900,000 and $9 billion corporately. So he was way in debt, but he came roaring back. That's his latest book called The Art of the Comeback. And the reason so many people do not survive such crashes is because emotionally they're scarred for life or forever. That's what it's, I'll never do that again. That's too risky. I should never have done it. By blaming other people or blaming the market or blaming the economy, they fail to gain the magic of a mistake. They fail to understand that this is a no-lose financial world, that if in that mistake, you're going to get smarter and come back stronger. But it doesn't give you the right to be stupid about it. In other words, to go and do what I've done and you don't have the experience, that's not, you know, that's being foolhardy. And there's a very big difference. When I read the financial statements of a business, let's say I'm going to buy a stock in, I don't have to worry about the price, the P.E. ratios, and all the other garbage that people go by. I just look at the fundamentals of a company because I can read the numbers. When I buy a piece of real estate, I look at that real estate, I just look at the numbers. If it doesn't make sense to the bottom line, i.e. putting cash flow in my pocket, why would I buy it? And so the world's richest investor is Warren Buffett, and he's a fundamental investor. He says he rarely goes to the stock market. The only reason he goes to the stock market is to watch and see if somebody's about to do something stupid. Where he does his investing is out of the financial statements, calling the owners of the company, doing his fundamental analysis. So he doesn't take any risk. That's why he's so rich. He says the best way to get rich is don't lose money. And for the average E-quadrant employee, the biggest place they lose money is through taxes. And that's why it's really hard to get ahead. So that's why for somebody who really lacks the financial education, then acquiring a lot of money as a cushion makes sense. But the more your financial intelligence goes up and the less your risk goes down and your riskiness as an investor goes down, you need less of that cushion and you can move more into the market. But you have got to do your job. You're part of it. There's a price to pay. As they say, there is no free lunch. Most investors want a hot tip. You know, they could talk to their taxi driver or their best friend. And that's not investing. That's speculation bordering on gambling. You know, I want to get this IPO, man. I want to make some money. Well, that's no different than the idea of instant gratification and getting a paycheck. I want to make some money. In my opinion, that's extremely risky because if the market reverses on you, you're going to lose it anyway. As my friend says, 8 of 10 investors don't make any money. It doesn't mean they lose it. It's that they make it and they give it back. Because they don't know how to hang on to it. And the way you hang on to it is by reading the financial statements, acquiring a real asset, and that asset on a consistent basis puts money in your pocket. That's investing. Everything else, buying and selling, is called trading. You know, I'm going to buy low, sell high. That's a trade. That's not an investment. Or I want a hot tip. That's speculation. And so that's the difference between risk and risky. So I'd like to share with you a baby step, a way that you can reduce risk as well as stop being so risky. The reason I created the Board Games Cash Flow for adults was to teach people, number one, to manage their money like a rich person, and number two, to read financial statements well. For example, most average people say it's as safe as money in the bank. And that's why a lot of people think the way to get rich is work hard, pay bills, and put money in the bank. They don't invest. The problem is, if you read the financial statements, you'll see that the bank is paying, let's say, 3% on your money. Not only are they paying you 3%, the government taxes you on that 3%. And it taxes at approximately 30 to 40%, depending on what rate you want to talk about. And inflation is ripping you at 4%. So you're actually losing money by having money in the bank. So it's interesting that what they say is save money and put it in the bank, yet the government taxes you on it. Now, if you have money in a home equity loan or a mortgage, they give you a tax break for being in debt. So if you're financially literate, you'll sit there and go, huh, somebody wants me to do something that doesn't make financial sense to me. But if you're not financially literate, you can't read that very simple statement by looking at the actual facts. Now, there's things you cannot see also. Is that $1,000 you have in the bank, the federal government allows the bank to lend that money out 20 to 40 different times. In other words, your $1,000 in the bank can be loaned out up to $20,000, which they'll charge, let's say, 20% or 18% if it's credit card debt on your $20,000. So your $1,000 sitting in your asset column is worth to the bank $20,000 to $40,000, depending on what they call the reserve rate, which is determined by the Federal Reserve, is what they'll allow you to leverage your savings dollars out at. Interestingly enough, too, when you read the financial statement of a bank, you'll find out that your mortgage shows up in the bank's asset column and your savings show up in the bank's liability column. That's why they don't give you a tax incentive to save money. And they penalize you to save money, and they give you a tax incentive to get in debt because it's the bank's asset. And that's why I've always said to people, ever since the signing of the Magna Carta, the rich have written the rules. And the golden rule of business is he who writes the rules has the gold. And so acquiring the cash flow game, and you play it once a month like I recommend, it's a priceless game. Not only that, is you get together with four of your five of your friends who want to become wealthy along the path with you, take your friends with you, and you help each other along the way. It's called cooperation. That's how you get there. The best part about cash flow is once you've become an expert at it, you can get out of the game, out of the rat race in under an hour consistently. Then you bring in strangers and you start teaching them. It's not that they learn anything, but you get to observe other people making mistakes right in front of you, and you begin to understand why they struggle financially. Because what a game is like a mirror. It reflects back upon you what you know and what you don't know. Not only can you play with many people and help many people with the game, but you can also become a teacher then. And the more you teach, the smarter you get. But it's really designed for people who want to become business owners and investors and reduce the risk, the educational risk, so that you don't have to be so risky as an investor. That's just one baby step you can take. You can acquire Cashflow 101 and learn the fundamentals of business and investing. So other small baby steps you can do on a regular basis to reduce risk and being risky is you can read the financials pages of your newspaper or the Wall Street Journal on a regular basis. What you do is you pick up the trends and what's going on in the market. Listen to the financial news on radio or television. The reason I say read the paper and listen to television and radio is you begin to pick up the vocabulary of finance. One of the biggest differences I got between my rich dad and my poor dad was that my poor dad had a poor man's vocabulary. In other words, he had the vocabulary, unfortunately, of a school teacher. He talked about math scores, algebra, trigonometry, and all this. My rich dad had the vocabulary of a rich person. He understood the difference between shorts, call options, put options, ratios, depreciation, and things like this. So the difference between a rich person and a poor person is their vocabulary. So the one reason you want to read newspapers or play my board game or listen to the radio is you're trying to do your best to pick up the vocabulary. The English language consists of approximately 2 million words. The average person has command of about 5,000 of those 2 million words. So the difference between a rich person and a poor person is what of those 5,000 words is a rich person's vocabulary. Unfortunately, the average person has a vocabulary of a poor middle-class person, which is your house is an asset, you know, work hard. That's not the vocabulary of a rich person. So that's why I want you to read the newspaper, listen to the radio, and watch television, because you begin to pick up the vocabulary of money. Listen to educational programs like this one. It's something I have done on a consistent basis. As I said, I am a product of Nightingale Conant myself. I'm the next generation, maybe. But I actually believe what a lot of those guys said was that they just drove in their car and they listened to the words of mentors or masters over and over and over again. When I go to the gym, I have a Walkman strapped on my back and I listen, you know, as I'm on the treadmill, I'm listening to some of the greatest minds who are sharing with me their vocabulary, and the vocabulary forms their thoughts. And that's why a lot of times people say, I need a mentor. Well, you don't need a mentor. All you have to do is buy the program of some of the greatest minds around. I listened to Peter Lynch for one time, I think 20 times, same tape over and over and over again, because I didn't understand what he was getting at. And after the 20th time, finally made sense to me. And understanding that great investor's mind has changed the way I invested. So that one little cassette has made me literally hundreds of thousands of dollars because it changed the way I thought, and that's why they're really valuable. I subscribe to financial magazines and letters, and I don't read them all, but I glance through them. The reason I like newsletters or faxes from some of the people in the market is because the market is changing at a split-second rate right now. And it's not that I'm investing at that high split-second rate, but it keeps my mind up to speed. The web is going to change all the rules, that if you're not moving at that high rate of speed, you'll be falling further and further behind. So I'm doing my best to stay up in its current as quickly as possible. So newspapers are good, but some of these newsletters where I spend $500 annually for, all they're doing is keeping me abreast of a fast-changing market. One of the reasons I can read a financial so quickly now is because my rich dad used to sit me down and have me read financial statements and analyze real estate deals on a regular basis. I just read them and read them and read them. What happened is, the best I can understand, is it went from my conscious mind to my subconscious mind. Thinking is too slow. Your subconscious mind can process data far faster than your conscious mind. So one of the reasons I have a hard time explaining to people what I do as an investor is because after 40 years of just practicing rote repetition is unconscious competence. Repetition is a way of physically driving the competence into your unconscious mind so that when you read a real financial statement, you're not trying to say, well, what is this and how would I go there? You can boom, understand it automatically, because today things are moving at such a high rate of speed. If it takes you a full week to analyze one deal, you'll never be an investor. Like for me right now, it's called deal flow. I'm looking at about 10 deals, sometimes a day, sometimes a week, depending on how many I look at. I have to look at them, split second, make a decision whether it fits or doesn't fit, whether it's risk or risky, and I get rid of it that quickly. Repetition is how we ultimately learn our life skills.
This is the end of Side 7. Please fast forward the tape to the end to cue up Side 8 for your listening.